So why do we have a relationship with God? Why? I mean, or maybe why do we love God? Why do we worship him? Why do we serve him? I mean, is it because of all the things that he's done for us? Or is it because of who he is? I mean, if you really think about it, that's not really a simple question, is it? Matter of fact, I can promise you, it's one you probably should think about before you just jump in and try to answer it. Because the more you think about it, based on how you live your life, you may learn that depending on the situation, your answer might change. We've been learning about prayer. This is, I think, our fourth Sunday as we've been going through the Bible and learning how the different people in the Bible prayed. Now, prayer is how we maintain our relationship with God. Would you agree? Matter of fact, without prayer, without you having communication with God, you really can't have a relationship with him. Matter of fact, the more that you pray or communicate with God, the greater the potential for a stronger relationship. Would we agree? Okay. So let me just give you a synopsis. What have we learned so far? So we learned with Abraham. What did Abraham teach us? Well, he taught us that God is someone that's worth pursuing. He is. He's someone that's worth pursuing. And we should want to spend time with him. We should want to. As a matter of fact, it should be a desire inside us to be around him, to be in his presence. Now, Abraham did that for partly because of all the things that God did for him. And God did a lot for Abraham. But we also learned that he wanted to be with God also just for who he was. Just wanted to be in the presence. Matter of fact, the stronger or more mature that your relationship with God becomes, the greater your communication level comes with him. And then we learned about David. Now, David, he was kind of an interesting character. He really is. I mean, David taught us the importance of being real in our relationship with God. Because, look, to be honest, our prayers should mirror what's going on inside us, right? I mean, God already knows what's in there anyway, right? So does it do any good at all for you to fake a prayer to God? To pretend like, you know, something's not bothering you? Or pretend that there's, you know, well, I really don't want that, God. But, you know, if you happen to want to give it, I mean, being coy with God, does that really do you any good? But I've also learned that the more that we're not real with our prayers, it actually hurts your relationship with God. It actually has the ability to cause your relationship not to grow. Now, last week, you learned about King Saul. Now, King Saul, he showed us what having no relationship with God looks like. Now, those were all his choices, right? God did not want that relationship with him. When God chose him to be king, he expected him to want to follow after him. But see, but when you depend on people other than you doing the praying for you, when you're not willing to invest in a personal relationship with God, it shows. You will go through things in life that you had no business going through that if you had a relationship with God, you would have avoided. Matter of fact, you will get yourself into trouble that by yourself you will not have the ability to get out of because of no relationship with God. You know what I've learned, though, for many of us? Prayer is seeking the hand of God, not what's in the hand. No, that's not true. Because really, what most of us do is we seek what's in the hand. We want what God's going to give us, right? Instead of the guy who's doing the giving. This morning, we're going to look at the life of Job. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. It's not a popular book. Matter of fact, mostly in church, people avoid this book. Why? Because it's hard. The whole theme about Job is, why do bad things happen to good people? You see why people want to avoid it? Well, why? Well, because we believe that good people are not supposed to suffer, right? Look, let's be honest here. If you live a good life, do you expect God to bless you? Right? If you live a bad life, do you expect God to bless you? So we would prefer this book to be removed, right? Because this is an example of someone who was a good guy who had a lot of bad things that happened to him. I mean, look, in our minds, look, bad things should only happen to us if we do sin. We do something wrong. Then we can explain it. All right, then I just deal with that and, you know, then things will get better. Or we think it's Satan's attacking us and God just hasn't seen it yet. Once God sees that Satan's attacking us, God will come swooping in, he will fix it, and everything will be better, right? I can tell you this, but that isn't true. It's not. See, prayer is a relationship with God. It is, right? That's what prayer is. So you better understand who you're praying to. You better understand who God really is. You have to be able to handle how God does things and doesn't do things. See, if you believe prayer is, I have a need, I pray for it, God fixes it. If that's what you believe prayer is, you know what you're going to end up being? Really angry at God a lot of times in your life. You are. You're going to get to the point where you're going to grow bitter toward God. You're going to get really upset. You're going to get depressed in your life if that's what you believe prayer is. See, I think Job is going to show you this morning a different side of God. You may actually be challenged in how you pray. As a matter of fact, it actually may change your prayer life. So let's start right in it. The book of Job, Job chapter 1. Now, I'm going to have the scriptures behind me, so if you want to just... If you just want to look, you can turn there if you like. So Job chapter 1, starting in verse 6. One day, the angels came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came with them. The Lord said to Satan, "Where have you come from?" Satan answered the Lord, "From roaming throughout the earth, going back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? There's no one on earth like him. He is blameless and upright, a man who fears God and shuns evil." "Does Job fear God for nothing?" Satan replied. "Have you not put a hedge around him and his household and everything he has? You've blessed the work of his hands so that his flocks and herds are spread throughout the land. But now stretch out your hand and strike everything he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." The Lord said to Satan, "Very well then, everything he has is in your power, but not on the man itself. Do not lay a finger." Then Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. So what do we see here? We see God honoring Job, right? He literally is honoring. As a matter of fact, he's bragging about Job. How would you like to be that guy? You know, I mean, Satan comes strolling in and God's just like, "Hey, you see my buddy Job? Not bad, huh? Perfect, upright, walking, shuns evil." Matter of fact, he's totally blessed by God because of this, right? Which we like that theology, right? Be really upright, be really good, God protects you. And look, we see that happening. Satan's like, "Yeah. He's totally protected. You've got a hedge around him. You've made everything that he does blessed. Matter of fact, he's rich because of you. So of course he loves you. Of course he's not going to, you know, curse you. Of course he serves you." But remove that stuff. Remove the protection, and he's going to curse you to your face. See, the problem here is God takes up Satan on his offer. We don't like that, do we? We want that verse erased, right? Erase that verse, God. You're supposed to say, "No, I don't have to do that. No, Job's a good guy, so no." It doesn't say that, though, does it? You know what I find really interesting about this story, too, is was Job here did Job hear this conversation? This is between Satan and God. Job's not there. Does he have any idea what's about to happen? Nope. Not a thing. Now, I could read for you, and you can read it later. Go back, go to the book of Job, and you read this. Let's just say Satan does a really thorough job. He does. Wipes out everything that Job has. Every one of his kids, dead. Every bit of his, everything that he owns is either destroyed or stolen. It's gone. He's got nothing left. Nothing. Matter of fact, the only thing he's left with his wife. That's it. Everything else is gone. I mean, what do you do when tragedy strikes? How does that impact your prayer life? When really bad things happen in your life, does it impact your relationship with God? Does it? Well, why don't we look at Job's response? So Job, we'll jump down to verse 20. This is all this stuff has happened. At this, Job got up, tore his robe, and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Can I just say, wow? I mean, every time I read that, that literally blows me away. I don't know about you, but this man has lost everything. He didn't know it was coming. And where does he end? All right. Let's kind of break down. What did Job do? All right, first, did he try and deny what happened to him? No. No, he didn't at all. Matter of fact, all right, did he try to hide his feelings? Did he? No, I mean, he says he tore his clothes. He shaved his head, which in that culture, that's a disgrace. He literally shaved himself bald. And where does he end up? On his face, worshiping and praising God. Does he care who sees? Because trust me, he's ripped his clothes, so, and he shaved himself bald. So anyone who walks by, they can see that he's hurt. He is humbled. He literally is in despair before his God. And he doesn't care who knows. So what were his exact words to God? He basically said, "Look, I came into this world with nothing. I'm going to leave with nothing. God gives and God takes away." So even though I don't understand why God's doing it, it does not mean that God's not worthy of my praise. And then he falls to his face and worships. Now, look, am I saying that Job wasn't angry? Trust me, the man was angry. Look, he's human. You do that to someone and I promise you you're angry. Promise you. Am I saying that Job didn't question why? You don't think that Job questioned God? Of course he did. Would you? Of course you would. He's human, just like us. But I am saying that Job knew his place. And when you're in the presence of God, it's on your face. In worship, because of who he is. Look, sometimes you do that with tears in your eyes because of the intense tragedy that has just happened in your life. Sometimes it's literally with your hands raised and you are dancing in celebration because of the incredible things that God has done for you. See, but God gives and God takes away. Can't you see why God literally called him blameless and upright? See that now, right? I mean, with all the things that happened, Job didn't sin in what he said. Didn't sin at all. Now, I wish I could say that's all that happened to Job. All right, that's done. Job made it. Woohoo! High five. You made it through the test. Nope. If you keep reading, you're going to see an identical scene. Satan comes back up to heaven, has another conversation with God. And God does the same thing. Look at my man Job. brags on him all over again. Look, even with everything you did, nothing wrong. Nothing. And Satan's like, yeah? That's because you wouldn't let me touch him. Put him in my power. And so God's like, all right, I accept your challenge. Just don't kill him. You can do anything you want to him. Just don't kill him. Satan's thorough. Does a good job. He literally goes to Job, and from the top of his head to the sole of his feet, he has painful sores over his entire body. Let me give you an idea of the pain. Here, put up the verse, the next verse. This is in Job chapter 2, verse 8. It says, then Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it as he sat among the ashes. The pain that he was going through was so intense that he's literally using broken pieces of pottery to scrape the sores on his body. Look, I've known some people who've dealt with some severe pain in their life. I know some of the things that my mom and others in this congregation have gone through from pain. So that may give you just an idea of where Job was at. It doesn't even end there, though. The humbling of Job has just begun. See, you would hope that the people around Job would be a source of strength, right? A source of hope. I mean, look, his wife is alive. So in our minds, what we want to read is Job goes home, wife is there, and they just love on each other. They comfort each other. They're literally there, you know, just being a support, and we'll get through this together, right? That's what we want to read. Verse 9. His wife said to him, are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die. He replied, you are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? In all this, Job did not sin in what he said. Did you hear that? Job didn't sin in what he said. I can't imagine how hard it would have been to keep my big mouth shut. I'm going to be honest with you. Look, and just agree with your wife. I mean, you know, get so angry that you just give up. You're a pastor. I know, I'm just being real. Can you imagine? I mean, I hope I have the strength like Job. When I go through something like that, and continue to follow no matter what happens to me? I do. I hope I have that. I mean, I see such, I've heard of these incredible stories. Have you heard of them? Different missionaries that have left America and they've gone to countries where you're not allowed to preach the gospel. And when they get caught, the humane thing that happens to them is they get killed. Usually what happens is they're put in like prison camps, working camps, where they either they slowly starve to death or they eventually die from sickness. I mean, I've read the stories inside the Bible and just what the accounts of the different disciples and the apostles who were literally tortured for what they did, for what they would preach about. And they didn't stop. Matter of fact, the posture of these apostles was one of praise and worship. Man, there's a story in the Bible of the apostles. They were caught basically doing that. Inside, you know, around the town, they were preaching about the gospel. They got caught. They threw them into prison. They immediately get, as soon as they get out, immediately they go back and start preaching again. They just got out of prison and they're literally preaching again. So the religious leaders found out. And so they grabbed them. They literally brought them in front of them and they start interrogating them. And they quickly find out that no matter what we do, no matter what we say, they're not going to stop. In fact, I just want to read the tail end of that story. It's actually in Acts chapter 5. At the very end of verse 40, it says, they called the disciples in and had them flogged. Just let me explain to you what flogging is during this time. They would take the person and they would strip them from their waist up. They would either then take a rod or a whip. They would do 1/3 of the beating was done to the front, and the other 2/3 was done to the back. They would do up to 40 lashes. So this wasn't a little slap in the hand. They literally beat the snot out of them. Then they ordered them not to speak the name of Jesus and let them go. The apostles left the Sanhedrin rejoicing. They just got the snot kicked out of them. And they are rejoicing because they had been counted worthy of suffering disgrace for the name. Day after day in the temple courts and from house to house, they never stopped preaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Messiah. And we get frustrated when we get a paper cut. I'm not kidding. We have stern conversations with God when things don't go our way, don't we? God. When our lives don't seem blessed enough. Or heaven forbid, something bad happens that inconveniences us. The microwave breaks. What, I gotta cook it now? Really? I gotta get the oven on? Forget tragedy in your life. Have you ever wondered what some of the heroes of faith must think when they're looking down from heaven at us? You know, the ones that literally counted it all joy when they rejoice at the beatings and they listen to our prayers here in America. Oh, God, they were making fun of me at work again. Yeah, they saw my Bible and they were relentless. All day long they made fun of me. I'm bringing it home, you know, because, you know, I don't need the stress. Stress? I'm embarrassed when I start to think, I look back at some of my prayers of the things that I ask God or the things that I'm not willing to say to God. I have to admit, I get embarrassed when I really think of him. I mean, he gives and he takes away. And the name of the Lord is still to be praised. You know, I've learned in churches, there's a wrong teaching. There is. In churches, there's a teaching that is wrong. It says that if you're obedient, you will always get blessed. And if you are sinful, you'll always be cursed. Look, I can understand why people would think that way, because it kind of sounds logical, doesn't it? You know, you do good things and you will get good things, right? If you do bad things, you will get bad things. The problem is that teaching isn't always right. It's not. I mean, if you read in Job, what did he say? Blameless, upright. No one like him on earth. If you continue to read, Job's friends finally come. He has three friends, and they come to mourn with him. And look, the reality is, I think they honestly wanted to help him. I really do. These were friends that loved him, and matter of fact, they came together with him, and for 7 days, they just sat with him in silence. They literally just wanted to be close to Job. They sat with him, and they basically just kind of mourned with him. And then after 7 days of silence, they start to speak to Job, and they literally are trying to help. I mean, read the story. They really are trying to help Job. Their names were Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. I mean, they believed just what I talked about. They believed that if bad things were happening to Job, well, Job must have done some bad things. And so if Job just repented, get right with God. And they literally spend chapter after chapter talking to Job saying, buddy, stop being stubborn. You did something wrong. Look at all this bad stuff that's happening to you. Just ask for forgiveness and it'll get all better. God will fix everything. Matter of fact, this is, let me just give you one verse. This is one of the things that this kind of summarizes all of what they keep saying. I mean, really, for chapters, they're saying this to Job. It's Job chapter 4, verse 8. It says, as I've observed, those who plow evil and those who sow trouble reap it. So what is he saying? You know, you planted seeds of sin, right? So you're getting a harvest of bad things. I mean, that's just normal. Let's be honest here. When some bad things have happened in your life, have you ever thought that may be the case? where you've literally kind of gotten on your knees and said, God, have I done something wrong? Is there sin in my life? I mean, if I, you know, am I out of your will? Have I disobeyed? Have I done something wrong? Look, I'm going to be honest. I've done that. I have. Look, as a parent, what do? When my children do something that's wrong, I give them a consequence. It's a punishment. When they do right things, I reward them. God's the same way. He is. But what do you do when tragedy strikes and you have not sinned? You haven't. We read it. Blameless and upright. God is bragging about Job to Satan. He's saying, this is the man. Look at him. Even when tragedy struck, time and time again to Job, he didn't sin. Didn't. And he did. He heard his friends over and over just kind of poking at him. Job, you're being stubborn. Job, stop being stubborn. Just repent. Change. Finally, I mean, this is in chapter 27. Finally, Job just says something to him. And listen to his words. 27 verse 1. And Job continued his discourse. As surely as God lives, who has denied me justice, the Almighty who has made my life bitter, as long as I have life within me, the breath of God in my nostrils, my lips will not say anything wicked, and my tongue will not utter lies. I will never admit you are in the right. Till I die, I will not deny my integrity. Job is saying is, I haven't sinned. It's not true. I haven't done anything. And that's true. The tragedy he went through was not because of sin in his life. Look, you want something really chewy to chew on this week? You really want something good? The tragedy that Job went through wasn't because of sin. It was because of his great obedience. Were it not for the fact that Job was the most upright, would that tragedy have happened to him? No. So is it possible that you're going through some really crappy situations in your life and it's because you've been following God the way that God's wanted you to? God's bragged about you? Now the verses we'll also see is that Job is imperfect like us. He is. I'm telling you, read the book of Job, you'll see. He is an imperfect human just like you are. Have you ever demanded God explain himself to you? Have you?
I have.
I'll be honest, I have. Have you ever demanded that? Don't feel bad. Job did it. Job knows that God's always in control. He does. So if something bad was happening to him, God knows. God could fix it. In this situation, God didn't fix it and didn't stop it from happening. He didn't. Matter of fact, Job says God has denied him justice. We just read it, right? God has made his life bitter. Was that the truth?
Yep.
See, the problem is God is God and he can do anything he wants. Oh, we don't like that. Pastors, take that one back. The Bible. God is God. God's ways are above our ways. God's thoughts are above our thoughts. You don't believe me? Put the scripture up. Isaiah 55, 8 and 9. For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. As the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. You know what God's saying right here? I'm smarter than you. That's what he's saying, right? I'm smarter than you. He knows better than you. And you know what? You should be so thankful that's the case. You really should. It should literally bring us to our knees, like Job, in worship, knowing that we have a God who is smarter, all-knowing, all-loving, good, on the throne. It's interesting. At the end of the book of Job, God finally speaks. Because you have like Job and his friends kind of going back and forth for chapter after chapter. And finally, God decides to speak. I mean, first, God sets the record straight. Second thing he does, he literally addresses the three friends and basically just destroys their theology. That basically says, you know, that, you know, when bad things happen to you, it's because you're bad. He literally kills that theology. But then he goes to Job and he gives Job just a taste of who he is. He does. Look, I want to read a little of this and just, I mean, listen to the words. It's just cool when you hear this. Job 38, verse 1. Then the Lord spoke to Job out of the storm. He said, "Who is this that obscures my plans with words without knowledge? Brace yourself like a man. I will question you, and you will answer me." I don't know about you. If God, would it have shocked you if Job wet his pants right there? I mean, honest. I mean, you literally have the God of the universe looking at you saying, who are you? You're questioning me? Okay. Now it's my turn. I'm going to ask the questions and you're going to answer. How would you like to have been Job right there? Let's keep reading. Verse 4. "Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set, or who laid its cornerstone? While the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for the joy. Who shut up the sea behind doors when it burst forth from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and wrapped it in thick darkness. When I fixed the limits for it and set its doors and bars in place. When I said, 'This far you may come and no further. Here is where your proud waves halt.' Have you ever given orders to the morning or shown the dawn its place, that it might take the earth by the edges and shake the wicked out of it? The earth takes shape like clay under a seal. Its features stand out like those of a garment. The wicked are denied their light, and their upraised arm is broken. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this." It just goes on and on. I mean, that's just a little snippet of God talking to Job. I'm telling you, Job is actually considered by, we're not just talking theologians here, it's considered by most literary experts, both inside and outside the church, as one of the greatest books ever written. It is a great read. Grab a hot drink, find an afternoon, and read it. Just read it through. And you'll just be in, it literally is incredible. Because God very quickly and effectively reminds Job who he is and just how powerful he is. See, when you come into the presence of God in prayer, whether it's because you're rejoicing for something awesome that God has done, or you're weeping because of something awful that has happened in your life, do you approach God as if he's the creator of all, or if he reports to you? Let me give you Job's answer. Job 40, verse 3. "Then Job answered the Lord, 'I'm unworthy. How can I reply to you? I put my hand over my mouth. I spoke once, but I have no answer. Twice, but I will say no more.'" It's interesting. God doesn't stop there, though. God literally then continues and talks about, let me just give you another small snippet. This is God talking to Job. I'll just start from verse 9. Do you have an arm like God's? And can your voice thunder like his? Then adorn yourself with glory and splendor, and clothe yourself in honor and majesty. Unleash the fury of your wrath. Look at all who are proud and bring them low. Look at all who are proud and humble them. Crush the wicked where they stand. Bury them all in the dust together. Shroud their faces in the grave. Then I myself will admit to you that your own right hand can save you. It goes on and on. Finally, in the very last chapter of Job, Job chapter 42, Job finally, I guess you'd say, answers God completely. Then Job replied to the Lord, I know that you can do all things. No purpose of yours can be thwarted. You asked, who is this that obscures my plans without knowledge? Surely I spoke of things I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. You said, listen now, and I will speak. I will question you, and you shall answer me. My ears have heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. Therefore, I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. You see, if you want to have a relationship with God, you have to understand who God is and be okay with that. God's God. He gives and he takes away. Both of those actions are worthy of your praise. Both. Both. Not just when he gives, but when he takes away. But God, I didn't want you to take that away. I'm God. God, why did you take that away? I don't have to tell you. I'm God. But that's not fair. I'm not fair. I'm God. See, I started this sermon with you questions. Why do we have a relationship with God? Why do we love God? Why do we worship God? Why do we serve God? If your answer is because of all the things that he's done for you, eventually you're going to grow angry. You're going to grow bitter at God. Why? Because he's going to take away and not tell you why. But if your answer is because of who he is, your relationship is going to begin to mature. It is. You're starting to grow up. You're not just a little child who likes mom because mom gives me cookies. See, eventually that child grows up and learns to love mom, for who she is, not for what she gives you. See, many people stop following Jesus when they get the realization that God is God. And sometimes there are no explanations. There are no answers. God may not give you the reason why. Other than that, he's God. And that he's worthy of your praise. I guess my question to you this morning is that enough for you? See, God is good all the time. Because everything he does is good. Whether we think it's good or not, that doesn't change it. It's good because God did it. I guess you have to decide, are you willing to trust that? Don't follow God because of what you want him to do for you today and what you hope he's going to do for you tomorrow. Don't. Because you know what? He may not do anything else for you. There may be a conversation right now happening in heaven. You're not hearing it. God may say, have you considered my daughter, Jem? Look at her. Look at her. She's soaring. She is obedient. She's done exactly what I've asked her to do. What if God accepts the challenge? because he gives and takes away. And his name is still worthy of our praise. Don't follow, remember, and I'll end with this. Jesus fed thousands of people. I think that they said it was 5,000 families. So they figure that's probably like 15 to 20,000 people during that time, maybe more. As soon as he was done feeding them, all the crowd loved him. We got free everything. Then he starts giving them some teaching. They didn't like the teaching. They started to leave. He looks at his disciples and says, are you going to leave too? They looked at him and said, well, where else would we go? There's no one else who speaks the words of life, the words of truth. Who else would we follow? See, if your relationship isn't based on that, it will crumble. Because you know what? God will take someone from you too soon in your eyes. And you'll ask him why, he won't give you a reason, and you'll get bitter. That's not fair, God. You can't be loving because you didn't do exactly what I told you to do. My plan was better. You should have followed my plan, God. That should change your prayer life, right? See, when you get to the point where it's not my will, but yours be done, when you allow God to change your wants, when you allow God to change your desires, when you get so close to him in his presence where what he wants is all you want, and no matter what happens, you can walk. You can walk through. So that's my question. Is it enough for you? Because he gives and he takes away. Both are worthy of